I was all jiggy and sparky. All I could think of was, over the waves, that was where it all began. I rang the doorbell. I sprang at it, for I knew if I didn't I'd still be walking up and down when the summer came round. I nearly ran away, but I didn't. I tidied myself up and coughed and scraped off the fly splats and the stew as best I could. And then the door opens and there she was. I knew she'd look like that. A chain on her glasses and all. There was no holding her once she got started. Oh, she says it's nothing now to what it used to be. In the old days I had 20 or 30 people at a time staying in this house. And I says, you probably wouldn't remember them all then. But no, she says, that's where you're wrong. Old and all as I am, there's not one person stood in this house but I remember. Are you all right for tea there? I said, I am indeed. Ah, you'll have another drop, she says. All right so, I said. I always had lots of guests from the entertainment world, always did. Now, what did you say your father's name was again?
Brady, I said.
Brady, then, she says again. There was a Lucius Brady. He was a musician. He played the piano. And a very good singer he was, too, as I recall. What was the name of the song you said your dad sang again?
I dreamt that I dwelt in marble halls, I said.
She says. Of course I know the song, but I can't say it rings a bell. What did you say his full name was again?
Bernard Brady, I said.
And she said it after me a few times, shaking her head. And it was only after I said, Benny, that her jaw dropped, and she looked at me all different.
From where did you say? She says.
And when I told her, she starts humming and hawing. I says, he never stopped talking about the days here, and the beautiful things and all that. But all of a sudden she didn't want to talk about it any more. She says, God knows I don't know where to start with this work. I said, but what about Di and that? You said. But then she says, oh, I don't know, my memory's not what it used to be. She tried to make a laugh out of it. Old age is catching up on me, she says. Ha ha.
I said, why will you not tell me?
You said you'd tell me. She just shook her head. Please tell me. I have to hear it. I have to hear it. No, she said, let me go. All I wanted to hear was something about them lying there listening to the sea outside the window. But it didn't matter. I didn't hear it anyway. When I said to her, go on, tell me you said you would, she said, get your hands off me, do you hear me? What can I tell you about a man who behaved the way he did in front of his wife? No better than a pig the way he disgraced himself here. God help the poor woman, she mustn't have seen him sober a day on their whole honeymoon. Then what did she do? She said, I'm sorry. But I was in the hall when she said it. It didn't matter now anyway. I just closed the front door softly with a click. I went up the town. There was a few people about. They were going about their business. There was a woman shopping and a council man in waders over a manhole, and convent girls outside a cafe. I bought a comb. My hair was getting all tangled up. But the thing was that beside the shop where I bought the comb, there was another shop. I must have missed it on the way down. It was a music shop. There was a dog hanging over the door, staring into a trumpet, trying to find his master's voice. I went in, and who's behind the counter? Only the music man, humming to himself and writing out notes on a music manuscript, like Di used to before he stayed out in the tower all the time. I walked around. Gramophones, how many? 20 maybe. All kinds. Big trumpets, little trumpets, any kind you want. Then what did I hear? Only this gurgling. And when I look over, what's that old music man doing, only pouring himself some tea? Want some, he says. A spot of tea, he says. He had some good sayings, that music man. His sayings made me so happy I wanted to cry. I was away off filling him in on Ma and Da and the song and saying the rosary on the rocks and everything. So he played the trumpet, he says, your father. Yes, I says, and I told him some of the tunes. Well, if he could handle that solo, he says, about one of the songs, he certainly knew how to play a trumpet. Outside, the town had turned into glass, the colour of dawn light. Then I saw it, and when I did, I nearly fainted. I don't know why, I'd seen it plenty of times before. My legs went into legs of sawdust. Trot, trot, goes the sad-eyed ass, pulling the cart and away off into the misty green mountains and the blue clouds of far away. And right over the picture there in big black letters, Emerald Gems of Ireland. I flicked through the pages over and over, reading all the names, and when I went to pay the music man, I dropped the coins all over the place. Then I went into the whole story about Philip and Joe and everything. It was like a cavalry charge of words coming out of my mouth. I didn't know where they were all coming from. Then he says the best thing of all. But of course there's a far better book than that available now. There it is behind you. A much better book. It was called A Treasury of Irish Melodies. There was no ass and cart on the front of it, just an old woman in a shawl standing at a half door, staring at the sun going down behind the mountains. "So this is better than the other book," I says. "Oh yes," says the music man, "much better." "I want to buy it," I says, all excited, and what did I do only drop more coins all over the floor. The music man thought that was a good laugh. He had no intention of selling it to me. He was giving it to me. "It's not every day I meet someone whose father could play the trumpet like yours," he says. "Isn't it enough that you like the songs?" Then he went away off humming a new tune to himself and parcelled it up for me. I just stared at the music man when he was handing it to me. He was the best man I ever met, that old music man. I kept looking at the book over and over and trying to see Joe's face as I handed it to him. I wasn't sure which road to take for the school. I went the wrong way a few times. "What do you think of this book?" I said to them. "It's good," they said. "Yes," I said, "it's for Joe Purcell. Emerald Gems is nothing compared to this one." The black road twisted in and out of the curly countryside like a ribbon. At the end of it was Joe's school. Big whirly clouds made of ink powder riding the sky, and the music book stuck in my back pocket. Then the school rising up out of the fields with all its yellow windows gleaming. Another house of 100 windows. But this time it was different. Behind one of them windows was Joe, and when I thought that I leaped so high I could have headed the moon like a football. I went round the back and nearly walked into a big bin full of brock. You'd think with me being king of the brock, I'd have been able to see that. I was in behind the kitchens. "Grrr," says a dog. "Fuck up," I said. But I managed to get past him all right. I could hear the toilets hissing. "Hiss, hiss, we can see you, Francie." I kept checking the book to see that I still had it in my back pocket. Up the stairs I went. What's this? A wooden door. Creak, creak. Our Lord Jesus appearing out of nowhere in the dark, hanging on the cross. "Hello, yes, what can I do for you?" "I'm looking for Joe Purcell, Jesus." "Straight on up to the top of the stairs." "Right so, Jesus, thank you." "What's all this?" I said. "100 sleeping bogmen." "But not for long. Wait till they see me and Joe in action." Ta-da! Flick! On goes the light, blazes away, and them all gone chinky-eyed and pulling the clothes round them. "What's going on? Who's putting on the lights?" They were all saying to the prefect, "Who is he? You do something about it, it's your job and all this." But he wasn't going to do anything. He had the blankets pulled up the same as the rest of them. I thumped my thigh with the rolled-up music book. "Joe! Where are you, Joe boy?" "I'm here. Saddle up. We're riding out." I shouted it for all I was worth, and then I shouted it again in case he didn't hear me. As soon as I said that, all the things I had ever worried about floated away like silk scarves in the breeze, and I knew all I had to do now was wait for Joe when we were off, and this time we'd be gone for good. It made me feel so good I shouted again, "Joe! Yamma yamma yamma! Yamma yamma yamma!" Then I said,
Yee-haw! Take him to Missouri, man!
I looked up, and who's coming but the priest? It was Father Fox, not because his real name was Fox, but because he had a long snout and a... I wonder how could I trick this fellow face? Hello, Father Fox, I said. I'm looking for Joe Purcell. You're what? He says. And I could see that Father Fox. He wasn't such a nice old fox at all. His face went all dark. I just said, I'm looking for Joe. Can you help me, please? What did Fox say, half to himself and half to the bogman? I cannot believe it. I just cannot believe it. He shook his head, and when the bogman seen him doing that, they did it too. I could hear doors banging and all this commotion and running on the stairs. Then two more priests came in, and who had they with them? Only Joe Purcell. Joe, I shouted, fuck! I knew I shouldn't have shouted that, but I did. Fox made a wind at me, but I ducked. He tried again, but that was no use either. I sidestepped it. He was only making a cut of himself. All I had to do now was walk right over to Joe, and that's what I would have done, only for what happened then. Who was standing right behind them? Only Philip Nugent. He was taller now, a bit tougher looking, but it was him all right, with the hair hanging down in his eyes. He was staring at me in a way he never did before, straight at me. As soon as I seen him, everything started to go wrong, because he wasn't supposed to be here. Joe said to me, "What do you want?" No, he didn't. He said, "What do you want?" Then he said, "Do you hear me? What do you want me for?" I never thought Joe would ask that. I never thought he would have to ask that. But he did, didn't he? And when I heard him say it, that was when I started to feel myself draining away. And I couldn't stop it. The more I tried, the worse it got. I could have floated to the ceiling like a fag paper. "Please, Joe, come with me," that was all I wanted to say. Dumb people have holes in the pit of their stomachs. And that's the way I was now, the dumbest person in the whole world who had no words left for anything at all. All I had now was one thing, and that was the music book. It had got all twisted up with sweat marks all over it. I says, "Don't worry, Francie, it's going to be all right." I smoothed it out a bit and handed it to him. Some way or other I dropped it, and the next thing the priest came in between us and says, "Look, this has gone far enough. Is this fellow a friend of yours or is he not, Purcell?" I looked at Joe. "Please, Joe," I was saying. But he wasn't looking at me. He was just saying, "I'm tired. I want to get back to my bed. It's 3 in the morning. Then Joe just shook his head and said, "No." Then he left. He said something to Philip on the way out, and Philip smiled. I stayed there for a minute. Then the priest said, "I think it's time you were leaving, Mr. Brady." I said, "Yes, yes, Father." And they brought me to the gate. They said I was lucky they didn't call the police. I said, "Yes, it was." Then I went off into the dark. I had left the bike somewhere, but I didn't know where. It didn't matter anyway. I just walked. I felt like walking. "That wasn't Joe," I said. "I don't know who that was, but it wasn't Joe." Joe was gone. They took him away from me. And all I could see was a pair of thin lips saying, "That's right, we did. And there's nothing you can do that will ever bring him back again. Isn't that true, Francis Pig? You little piggy baby pig." And I says, "Yes, Mrs. Nugent, it is." When I got to the town, they were all running round saying the world is going to end. The first thing I seen was Mickey Trainor, the holy TV man, wheeling a statue of Our Lady up the street in a barrow. "Did you not hear?" he says. "The world is going to end. It was on the news last night. It's all over," he says. "Oh, I know," says I. "I know that all right. You don't have to tell me that." I went on up the street and bought a packet of fags and something to clean me jacket. All they had was shampoo. "That'll do," I says. I went into the cafe. I bought a bag of tato crisps and went out to the hide. I tried to clean the jacket up with the shampoo, but it was no use. I used half the bottle. All it did was make it worse. Then I fell asleep. I woke up the next morning and went round to the slaughterhouse, but it was too early. I was waiting for near 2 hours before Leddy came. "How long are you here?" he says. "A good while, Mr. Leddy," I said. "It's near time you'd show your face round here. Where the hell were you?" "Oh," I says, "I was off rambling." "Rambling," he says. "You do well to ramble in your own time, Brady. I've a mind to kick you rambling down that road. They have half a ton of shite round at that hotel. You were supposed to collect it. And they've my heart scalded. Now get round there today and fucking well see about it." "Right so, Mr. Leddy," I said. When he was gone off down the town, I took the captive bolt pistol down off the nail where it was hanging and got the butcher's steel and the knife out of the drawer. There was all talk about Our Lady going to appear on the diamond. I heard two old women on about it. "We should be very proud," says one of them. "It's not every town the Mother of God comes to visit." "Indeed it is not," says the other one. "I wonder, missus, will there be angels?" "I wouldn't know about that now. But you're what odds whether there is or not, so long as she saves us from the end of the world. What do we care?" "Now you said it, missus. Now you said it. Everywhere you went. Not long now." I went by Dr. Roach's house. It was all painted up with big blue cardboard letters spread out on the grass. "Ave Maria, welcome to our town." I was wondering could I mix them up to make "This is Dr. Roach the Bastard's house." But I counted them and there wasn't enough letters. And anyway, they were the wrong ones. "Tell Leddy to collect this brock on time or it's the last he'll get from us," says the kitchen man, and stands there looking at me like I was stealing something off him. "I will indeed," I said, and started shoveling it into the cart. I shoveled and whistled away and made sure there wasn't a scrap left so there'd be no more complaining. Then off I went again on me travels. There was a nice altar on the diamond. There was three angels flying over it just in front of the door of the Ulster Bank. I never saw the town looking so well. It looked like the brightest, happiest town in the whole world. I went round the back swinging my meal bucket. I could see the neighbour's curtain twitching. "Whistle, whistle. Hello there, Mrs. Neighbour. It's me, Francie, with my special delivery from Mrs. Nugent." Then away she went from the window, so I knocked on Mrs. Nugent's door and out she came wearing her blue housecoat. "Hello, Mrs. Nugent," I said. "Is Mr. Nugent in? I have a message for him from Mr. Leddy." She went all white and stood there just stuttering. "I'm sorry," she said, "my husband isn't here. He's gone to work." "Oh," I said, "that's all right." And with one quick shove I pushed her inside. She fell back against something. I twisted the key in the lock behind me. She had a white mask of a face on her, and her mouth a small O. Now you know what it's like for dumb people who have holes in their stomachs, Mrs. Nugent. They try to cry out and they can't. They don't know how. She stumbled trying to get to the phone or the door. And when I smelt the scones and seen Philip's picture, I started to shake and kicked her I don't know how many times. She groaned and said, "Please." I didn't care if she groaned or said please or what she said. I caught her round the neck and I said, "You did two bad things, Mrs. Nugent. You made me turn my back on my ma, and you took Joe away from me." "Why did you do that, Mrs. Nugent?" She didn't answer. I didn't want to hear any answer. I smacked her against the wall a few times. There was a smear of blood at the corner of her mouth, and her hand was reaching out trying to touch me when I cocked the captive bolt. I lifted her off the floor with one hand and shot the bolt right into her head. Thlock was the sound it made, like a goldfish dropping into a bowl. If you ask anyone how you kill a pig, they will tell you cut its throat across, but you don't. You do it long ways. Then she just lay there with her chin sticking up. And I opened her. Then I stuck my hand in her stomach and wrote pigs all over the walls of the upstairs room. I made sure to cover her over good and proper with the brock. There was plenty of it. They wouldn't be too pleased if they saw me with Mrs. Nugent in the bottom of the cart. Then I lifted the shafts and off I went on my travels again. There was more hymns and streams of people up and down Church Hill with prayer books. Whistling away, on I went. My old man's a dustman, he wears a dustman's hat. I don't know where all the songs came out of. Well, it's one for the money. I am a little baby pig, I'll have you all to know. Yes, this is the Baby Pig Show, broadcasting on Radio Luxembourg. Hello, my good man. Fine weather we're having. What did you order? 2 pounds of chump steak. Or was it a half pound of Mrs. Nugent? I was passing by Mary's sweet shop, so in I went and got a quarter of sweets, clove drops. I came in to say hello to my old friend Mary, I said. Will you ever forget them old days, Mary? 20 years in Camden Town. What about that? What do you say we go inside and you can give us a song on the piano? I lit another fag and went on talking away, but Mary said nothing. Just scooped the sweets into the bag with a silver shovel, and then twisted it the way she did, spin, twist. And there it was, a little knobbly bag of best clove drops, yes indeed. Then she went and sat down by the window again, looking out across the square. Don't worry, Mary, I said, your troubles are over. Francie Brady, the Time Lord, is here. But soon as I said it, I felt stupid, and I tried to think of something completely different to say, but I could think of nothing. So I just put the sweets in my pocket and went out, the bell jingle jingle and the door closing behind me. Mary had the same face as Ma used to have, sitting staring into the ashes. It was funny, that face. It slowly grew over the other one, until one day you looked, and the person you knew was gone. And instead there was a half-ghost sitting there, who had only one thing to say. All the beautiful things of this world are lies. They count for nothing in the end. Where the hell were you, says Letty, when I got back to the slaughterhouse yard. Oh, tricking about, I says. Well, trick about in your own time, he says. I have to go on up to the shop. You take over here. Right, I said. That suits me. And I left down the barrow beside the pit of guts, and asked Letty where he'd put the lime. Clear off, grouse, I shouted, and he tore off through the gate with a string of intestines. I got the shovel and slit open the bag of lime. There was warm tears in my eyes because I could do nothing for Mary. I was whistling away when I looked up and seen Sausage and 4 or 5 bogmen police coming across the yard. I never seen them before, they weren't from the town. One of them kept looking over the whole time, sizing me up, trying to catch me eye to tell me, by Christ, you're for it now, boy. But I just went on skinning and whistling. I don't know what I was whistling. I think it was the tune from Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. Mr. Nugent was shivery and everything. I knew he couldn't bear to look at me. Where is she? Said Sausage. And the bull-necked bogmen got a grip of me, too, on either side. They had me now, all right. I wasn't fit to move a muscle. Oh, I said, this must be the end of the world. I hope the Blessed Virgin comes along to save me. Where is she? Says Sausage again. Malton ready rubbed flake, that's the one, I said to Mr. Nugent, and I got a thump in the ribs. Then they said, right, turn this place inside out. And that's what they did. They turned it upside down. I wonder, is she in behind this half a cow? No, she doesn't appear to be. What about under this septic tank? No, no sign of her. Then they got hysterical. They had to take Mr. Nugent away. What have you done with her? I said, who, and they got worse. They gave me a beating and took me for a drive all round the town. What had they draped across the chicken house? Only, the town welcomes Our Lady. They took me back to the station and gave me the father and mother of a kicking. In the middle of it all, what does one of the bullnecks say? Let me have a crack at him and I'll knock 7 different kinds of shite out of him. That finished me off altogether. I started saying it the way he said it. 7 different kinds of shite, for fuck's sake! The way they do it, they put a bar of soap in a sock, and I don't know how many times they gave it to me, but it leaves no marks. But it still knocks seven different kinds of shite out. The next day, Sausage came in, turning the cap round on his lap, looking at me with these sad eyes. Why does there have to be so many sad things in the world, Francie? I'm an old man, I'm not able for this any more. When I seen them eyes, I said to myself, poor old Sausage, it's not fair. All right, Sausage, I said, I'll show you where she is. Thanks, Francie, he said, I knew you would. It's gone on long enough. There's been enough unhappiness and misery. There has indeed, Sergeant, I said. There was a new detective down from Dublin in the front of the car. Fabian of the Yard, I called him, after the fellow in the pictures, and I was hemmed in between two of the bullnecks in the back. Sausage was all proud now that things had worked out and he hadn't made a cod of himself in front of Fabian. It'll be all over shortly now, Francie, he says. You're doing the right thing. I know, Sergeant, I said. When we turned into the lane, he drove slowly to avoid the children. What were they at now, selling comics on a table? It was a comic sale. They stood there looking after us. I seen tassels pointing. Look, Brendy, it's him. We stopped at the chicken house and Fabian says, you two men stay out here at the front just in case. You can't be too careful. Right, they said, and me and the sergeant and him and the other two went inside. The fan was humming away and it made me sad. The chicks were still scrabbling away. Who were all these coming with Francie? We waded through the piles of wood chips as we went along, and I said to them, it isn't far, it's just down here at the back. Fabian wasn't sure of where he was going, it was so dark, and when he walked into the light hanging in front of his face, it went swinging back and forth, painting the big shadows on the walls and the ceiling. I think the chicks must have known what was going to happen, for they started burbling and getting excited. I said, fuck, who put that there? And made on to trip and fall down. Watch yourself, says Sausage. It's very dark. And when Fabian came over to help me up, I had the chain in my hand. It had been lying there under the pallets where it always was. I swung it once and Fabian cried out, but that was all I needed. I tore into the back room and bolted the door. I didn't waste any time. I threw the chain there and flung open the window and got out, then ran like fuck to the hide. They brought more police in. You could hear them poking about night, noon and morning, and the sniffer dogs, woof, woof, on the bank of the river. Time was running out for the deadly Francie Brady. Oh, no, it wasn't. It was running out for fed-up Fabian and his men, for all they had found was a dead cat in the ditch, and you could hardly take that back to Scotland Yard. Well done, Detective Fabian. You didn't catch Brady, but you did catch this. A maggot-ridden old moggy. Congratulations. In the end, they just slowly drifted away. And then there was only me in the river, hiss, hiss. I went on to the main road, there wasn't a sinner to be seen. So off I went towards the town, whistle, whistle, I was back in action, away down the hill, round the lane by the back of the houses. In I went, ta-da, I'm home! What's this Ma used to say? I've so much tidying up to do, I don't know where to start. I rubbed my brow and stood there with my hands on my hips. I just don't know. Such a smell there was in the place. Not only had Grouse Armstrong been in, but every dirty mongrel in the town. I gathered up as much of it as I could and put it all in a big pile in the middle of the kitchen. Now, what about those mouldy old books? I threw them all on the pile, one after another. There was a heap of clothes lying in the corner. A handful of earwigs fell out of the pocket of Da's Al Capone coat. There were skirts and odd shoes and all sorts of things. I threw them all on. I didn't bother going through the drawers. I just turned them upside down. The records were still under the stairs, but I only wanted one. I threw the rest away. I plugged in the gramophone. It was working as good as ever. Then I carried it out to the scullery and put it near the sink. Right, says I. Now we're in business. I got the paraffin from the coal house and threw it round everywhere, but mostly on the pile. Spin, spin goes your head with the smell of it. Here we go, I says, and then what happens? No matches.
No fucking matches. Oh, for fuck's sake.
When I got out into the street, I couldn't believe it. What's going on now, I says. The drunk lad was directing traffic with a new tie on him.
This way to the Mother of God, my friends.
They were far too busy waiting for her to be bothered about me running round for matches. When I got back to the house, I locked all the doors and then I lit a couple of matches. Soon as they fell on the heap, up she went. Whoomph! I put on the record then and went in and lay down on the kitchen floor. I closed my eyes and it was just like Ma singing away, like she used to. In that first city where I did dwell, a butcher boy I knew right well. He courted me my life away, but now with me he will not stay. I wish in vain. I wish I was a maid again, but a maid again I ne'er will be, till cherries grow on an ivy tree. He went upstairs and the door he broke. He found her hanging from a rope. He took a knife and he cut her down, and in her pocket these words he found. Oh, make my grave large, wide, and deep. Put a marble stone at my head and feet, and in the middle a turtle dove, that the world may know I died for love. I was crying because we were together now. Oh, Ma, I said, the whole house is burning up on us. Then a fist made of smoke hit me smack in the mouth. It's over, says Ma. It's all over now. That's what you think, says the voice. And when I look up, who is it? Oh, for fuck's sake, I said, sausage! Ah, Francie, what were you at, for the love of God, he says, twisting the cap in his hands. Fabian was behind him with the one eye closed, giving me a dirty look. Let's see you try to escape now. Every time I woke up, there was a different bull neck standing by the bed. Then one day in comes Fabian walking like John Wayne, and I could see by the way he looked at me he meant business.
Okay, you son of a bitch, move. We're riding out. Right you be now, Mr. Fabian, sir.
So off we went, me and Sausage and Fabian of the yard. I could see Sausage as white as a ghost in the front, in case I'd make a cod of him again. But I wouldn't, for I knew that was what poker arse Fabian wanted, to be able to show off and give out to Sausage. Letty had the place all locked up, but the manure heap was still warm from the morning kill. I was sorry now I had gone nearer with the lime. I was afraid if she was gone they wouldn't believe me and the whole thing would start all over again. Come on, Francie, and we know and all this. But there was no need to worry, for after a while I knew by the sarge that he had hit something, and sure enough, when he pulled out the grape, there stuck on the end of it was part of a leg, and Mrs. Nugent's furry boot hanging. Fabian wasn't so smart then. Oh, Christ, he says, "Bruh!" Get sick all over his foot. I said to Sausage, will they hang me? I hope they hang me. He looked at me and says, I'm sorry, Francie, but there's no more hanging.
No more hanging, I says. For fuck's sake, what's this country coming to?
But Sausage was right. There was no more hanging. And in a few weeks there we were all off again. Me and the sergeant in the back, foot, away off down the road to another house of 100 windows. But this time there was no, ho-ho, hee-hee, they'll put manners on you here, or any of that stuff. We just talked about Ma and Da and the old times in the town. And when we said goodbye on the steps, he said to me, there's a lot of sad things in this world, Francie, and this is one of them. Goodbye, sergeant, I said. Right, says Fabian and the bull necks. Then they were gone, off down the avenue in the patrol car, and that was the last I seen of my old friend Sergeant Sausage. That was all a long time ago. 20 or 30 or 40 years ago, I don't know. I was on my own for a long time. I did nothing only read the Beano and look out at the grass. Then they said to me, "There's no sense in you being stuck up on that wing all on your own." The next week they introduced me to all these bog men making baskets and fat teddy bears. "Is there anything you want?" says the doc. "Yes," I said, "the Beano annual and a trumpet." "There you are," he says the next day. So now I have a trumpet, and if you could see me, I look just like Da going round the place in my Al Capone coat. Sometimes they have sing-songs in the hall and they ask me for a song. "Go on," they say, "you're a powerful musicianer. You're the boy can sing." Then off I go, and before long they're all at it. "That's the stuff, the butcher boy be cripes." "You're all enjoying yourselves," says the doctor. "Yes," I says, "doing the bogman tango. Out with the backside, up with the nose." One of them comes up to me one day, I was hacking at the ice on the big puddle behind the kitchens, and says, "What's going on here, or what do you be at with this ice?" "I'm thinking what I'm going to do with the million, billion, trillion dollars I'm going to win," I says.
"So you're going to win a million, billion, trillion," he says.
"That's right," I said. Then he leans into me and whispers, "Well, if you'll take my advice, you'll tell none of the bastards in here. They'll only fill you full of lies and let you down." "Ho, ho," I says, "don't you worry. Nobody's letting me down again."
"Nor me either," he says.
"Now you said it." Then he said, "Give me a bit of that stick there like a good man." And the two of us started hacking away together beneath the orange sky. He told me what he was going to do when he won his money. Then I said it was time to go tracking in the mountains. So off we went, counting our footprints in the snow, him with his bony arse clicking, and me with the tears streaming down my face.